Hello, my name is Tori Whitaker Martinez, and I'm the senior editor for Infection Control Today. And today I have the honor of having Jim Gauthier today with me, and I wanted to speak to him about the commentary that he was the lead author of on cleaning and disinfection. Jim is an infection prevention consultant and educator, and it is truly an honor. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much, Tori, for asking me here.
You are most welcome. So, would you mind explaining to me what your commentary covered?
So the commentary is titled Targeted Moments of Environmental Disinfection. And what it really boils down to is we told healthcare workers back in the 2000s when to wash or sanitize their hands. And the WHO published the five moments for hand hygiene, which basically boils down to these are five critical moments that we really need you to make sure your hands are clean, before you have contact with a patient, before you do anything very, very clean or aseptic, after contact with blood or body fluids, before you leave the patient's room, if you've touched the patient's environment. We have our five moments there. And when I look at cleaning and disinfection, we basically go into the patient's room, hopefully once a day. Clean high touch surfaces, and that's about it. So we go in and clean really well once a day, and then care occurs for the other, let's say, 23 and a half, 23 and three quarters hours of that day with no other targeted cleaning being done based on the care that we actually did. So that's where the genesis of this commentary came from.
So, what is it that you wanted to say in the commentary? What was your point?
I think the point of the paper is care happens all day. There is not an EVS tech standing behind the door every time somebody comes in the door to perform some form of care for the patient or the resident, if we're talking long-term care. As I put the paper together with my peers, and as I've talked about it, to different infection control groups and to environmental services groups, I always get this feedback of, well, what do you think we should clean? And what's not in the article, and I should probably do a follow-up to it, but what it really boils down to is if during care you've touched it or used it, clean it, is what the whole paper boils down to. But we did that into five moments. So as a microbiology technologist, I understand movement of microorganisms. I know what they look like. I know what they smell like. I know where they can hide. And I started looking at the literature with my co-authors as to where we can find bacteria in the near environment around the patient. And two of the dirtiest surfaces, when you start looking at papers that are trying to figure out an outbreak and where these organisms came from, the two dirtiest surfaces in the hospital, when I looked at the papers, were the overbed table and the bed rails. And when I started looking at what you can find on the overbed table and the bed rails, we started to think, well, those are also high touch surfaces. They get touched a lot. And we probably need to clean those more than just once a day.
So, what are the 5 points? What are the 5 moments?
So, what we're suggesting is disinfect the overbed table. So, moment one, before placing food or drink on the overbed table, it needs to be disinfected. Moment two, before and after aseptic practices. So, if healthcare workers coming in to do something like change a dressing, insert a line, perform catheter care, you need to disinfect before to establish your clean space and disinfect after. Moment three, anything to do with feces or respiratory secretions within the patient's bed space. So, if you're suctioning a patient, if the patient's expectorating for you, they're coughing up something. If you need to assist a patient with, say, their incontinence products, and get them into a clean incontinence product, you're going to need to disinfect something when you're done. Moment four, after any patient bathing within the patient bed space. So if you give the patient a basin and a face cloth and say, here, clean yourself up, breakfast is on its way, you're probably going to need to disinfect after. If you're using the pre-wetted wipes that are quite common in healthcare now, where you can warm up a small package of wipes, wipe the patient down or allow the patient to clean themselves. You have a wipe for each part of the body. In my experience, they end up on the overbed table. So again, after any patient bathing, you need to disinfect something. And moment five came from some discussion that I had as I did presentations on the early versions of this product is anything that is used on or anything that is used by a patient that touches the floor needs to be disinfected. Because I think we all have experience where somebody will come into a room and see the cell phone charger on the floor and pick it up and hand it back to the patient. Their call bell will fall and hit the floor and come back to the patient without being disinfected. So as these moments came, a lot of this is from reading the literature and addressing issues that come up, either through outbreaks or discussions on things such as, what do we do with floors? And I'm thinking, okay, it doesn't really matter too much what you do with a floor, as long as anything that touches the floor that's going to be used by a patient or on a patient is disinfected when it hits the floor. So the paper actually has 51 references as a commentary to support each of these moments. The overbed table that the patient will eat off of, none of us eat in our restroom, I would hope at home or in our bathroom, people probably do. But with a patient, they're sort of trapped there. So they may use a urinal if they're bedridden and put it on the overbed table if they don't use the thing on the side. All of us can remember what we've seen on overbed tables if we've gone into healthcare. So that's where I found the evidence that there's bacteria there and suggested we should really disinfect that overbed table before we put anything on it. And then the same with all the other moments. In the paper itself, one of the big feedbacks or pushbacks we get is don't give me anything else to do, especially if you're an RN trying to look after way too many patients. Don't give me anything else to do. So we designed a little table that has the five moments across the top and looked at different kinds of patients. A vented patient in the intensive care unit is going to require a lot more wiping if someone tries to follow these five moments than a med-surg patient that's able to ambulate, look after themselves, use the toilet. You may only be using three or four wipes just because they eat in bed. So it's not onerous as what we were looking at. We also realized that for this concept to work, the healthcare provider doing the care can't take the time to go look for a wipe because there are disinfectant wipes that you don't want near the patient. They're either caustic or they are poisonous. And you don't want to leave them near a patient. So the staff know where they are. But if they're not right at bedside, you're going to have this issue of staff not going to complete the five moments. We learned this with hand hygiene, and we developed something called point of care hand hygiene products, where the point of care is the patient and the care provider and the care all meeting together. And you want the hand sanitizer so that the care provider only has to reach out, the hand sanitizer is there, they can sanitize their hand as per moment two before they move on to another moment. So we proposed in the paper that you need to have a safe disinfectant wipe that could be kept where the care is going to occur. And you just need to look at the safety data sheet around the wipe. Find a wipe that works quickly so that surfaces aren't wet around the patient for 3 to 5 minutes. Find a product that you truly don't need to have personal protective equipment on to touch. Staff always would use their gloves because of the care that they're providing and things like that. But if you can find a safe enough product that's at head of bed, you may also then have the visitors or family helping to keep the environment cleaner around the patient. There will take some education because we run into the problem of people flushing wipes, not only family, but we've got care providers that if they have a wipe that is grossly soiled with feces, may go and flush it. And that causes problems down the road. But with a little bit of education, I don't see this as a huge problem in terms of having the wipes at head of bed.
None of that seems more than common sense. But the problem is just because it's common sense doesn't mean that it's top of mind. And I understand nurses have a lot. We can discuss burnout for hours, but the whole point is patient safety. So if you're going to be educating both the patient and visitors, then I don't see what the issue is. You know, ask the patient, ask the visitors to help you. Don't, you know, please wipe this down if you don't mind or whatever. So what did you say to this pushback? What did you say? I mean, you said that it wasn't as onerous as you thought it would be, but what about the pushback?
So we did a focus group on the concept. while we were originally discussing this. And at the focus group, we were asking, do you think it's important to have a clean environment around the patient? And the first nurse says, yes, it's very important, but cleaning is below my RN. The first nurse that stood up. Second nurse stands up. I agree with my buddy. I work at such a hospital. Very important to have a clean environment, but cleaning is below my RN. Third nurse stands up and she goes, well, I find this very interesting because at my hospital, at the start of every shift, the nurse had to document in the electronic patient record that they cleaned and disinfected the high touch surfaces around the patient. So of course I applauded, but she actually worked at a pediatric hospital. So they understood the importance of having a very susceptible group. The younger you are, the older you are. And they had it into the workflow. So I think some of the pushback we get is, as you said, burnout. Staff are just cooked. The pandemic didn't help at all. Nursing ratios to patients has changed. We've got a lot more going on. Our population is aging. I fully understand that. But when you put it in the framework of what you touched or what you used during care, so PAC 2, if during care you've touched it or used it, disinfect it. I give the example of myself. As a lab technologist, I used to be going to take blood. So I was a trained phlebotomist. So my scenario is I have my little basket of needles and tubes and requisitions. So I will go walking into the patient's room. I put the tray on the overbed table. So I've used the overbed table. I will sanitize my hands, put on a pair of gloves, and lower the side rail, which I probably shouldn't do with my clean gloves on, right? So that's sort of out of order, but I've used the overbed table, I've touched the side rail. I then perform my phlebotomy. After the phlebotomy is done, I'm going to pull up the side rail for patient safety so they don't fall out, pick up my tray, reach to the head of bed, take out a wipe, wipe off the side rail, wipe off the overbed table, go to the door, put my kid outside, drop the wipe in the garbage, take off my gloves, sanitize my hands as per moment 4 and 5 to get out of the room. So did that add a lot of extra time to the regular phlebotomy that I do day after day after day after day after day? No. And when I actually did the literature search, it's funny finding the papers that have been talking about this since 2010 to 2012. I've got the references that, you know, wiping high touch surfaces at least 3 times an hour mathematically modeled will reduce your MRSA rates, methicillin resistant staph aureus. I could find these papers talking about we need to clean more than once a day. You may see that during outbreaks. When I was an infection preventionist, as soon as we had something like norovirus show up, I've got patients vomiting and diarrhea. The first person I turn to is the head of environmental services saying, can you wipe the high touch surfaces more frequently than once a day? Sure, we'll give you an extra person. They'll just rotate through the entire ward, wiping down the handrails and make sure the bathrooms are clean at least once an hour. Done. The outbreak stops. When we submitted this paper to the Joint Commission's Journal of Quality and Patient Safety, the first editor, 2 out of the 3 peer reviewers got back to us saying, is there any evidence that this extra cleaning will reduce healthcare associated infections? And I didn't type, no, there is no evidence because nobody's doing this. I wanted to get the paper published. So I could find articles talking about when there are outbreaks and you increase the level of cleaning, the outbreak stops more quickly. You know, they're going to run their course anyways. You're always trying to get back to a mean. I understand that. But I think there was some evidence to show that this could happen. Where we ran into a problem is we had some health districts out west in Canada, in the Southern Alberta region, that were going to implement this. They were actually installing brackets in March of 2020. Oh, right. We had a pandemic show up. And so the focus had to change for a good year and a half. Now I'm hoping that they got back to, we got the brackets here, let's get the wipes in at head of bed, let's do some education of if you've touched or used it while you're in that room, let's disinfect it. And the nice thing about that statement, if I go in as a food and nutrition person, I'm going to drop a food tray off. I know all my job is I balance the tray, I take the wipe from head of bed, I wipe down the overbed table, I put the tray in front of the patient and say bon appetit and get rid of the wipe. Did that add a lot of time? Not really. If I go in as a therapist, respiratory therapy, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, keep track of what I touch or use and disinfect it when I'm done. So as I talk about it, not being a frontline healthcare worker, and I haven't been a frontline healthcare worker in terms of providing care since basically 2000, when I got into infection prevention full time, maybe I think it's way too easy to do because I'm not up there on the front line. Now I should sit down and chat with my son, who's an RN, and say, so what do you think of this concept? And see if he thinks it would work into his day. Problem is, he works with the behavioral health setting, so they don't really provide a ton of care. They basically make sure that everybody's playing nice and that the medications are on board when they're supposed to be on board, and they get to their therapies and things like that. But they're not providing care as such. So I don't know. I don't think I'm being naive, and the pushback always surprises me. But you have to remember, I am old enough that we did not wear gloves to do phlebotomy. Ambulance drivers didn't have gloves to pull up at a wreck. And I remember an ambulance EMS tech at a conference where we were talking about standard precautions back in the 80s saying to me, you're saying if I pull up to a car accident and there's arterial blood hitting a windshield, you want me to stop, put on a pair of gloves before I go over and put my hand in that guy's jugular vein? And the person presenting said, if that patient dies because you took 2.5 seconds to put on a pair of gloves before you put your hand over their jugular, they were going to die anyways. Put on the freaking gloves before you have contact with blood or body fluids. So I'm very used to having pushback. What do you mean I have to wear gloves? What do you mean I have to have protected sex? As we went through the HIV epidemic, where we were trying to explain to anyone having casual sex, you need to keep it wrapped, to put it simply. Trying to get healthcare workers to work using standard precautions in the laboratory. What do you mean I have to wear gloves now to open up my tube of blood? What do you mean I have to have a cap on my tube that I spin in my centrifuge so that if it breaks, it's contained? You know, I've had this pushback all through my career. Even in the laboratory in microbiology, I brought in concepts of how we work up different specimens and got pushback that are now standard practice. So I'm hoping, you know, this paper has been published since 2020. We're sitting here, you and I are having this conversation at the end of 2024. That as people take a good look at it, as they try it out, in hopefully 5 to 7 years, everybody will be going, we haven't been doing this forever because it's just the way that things are taught. Maybe I need to step back and get this taught at or discussed at nursing school, medical school, as though doctors might actually do it. But again, a physician coming in to examine a patient and they put some of their stuff down or they touch the side rail, is it so hard for them to grab a wipe and wipe it and go out? I don't know. Do you think I'm being naive?
I don't. But the problem is you do get pushback from our ends. I mean, half the time they don't even do their hand hygiene as often as they should. I mean, what is it, 50, 60 times a day they're supposed to be doing hand hygiene or more, and yet they only do it a third of that, if you're lucky.
And anything new gets pushback. Every single step we have brought into healthcare has had pushback on it. We now, you will not see a healthcare team insert a central line at bedside without full barrier precautions. But again, I remember in the intensive care unit where the patient needs a central line put in and the doctor goes, washes their hands, throws on a pair of gloves and jams something down into the neck with a little bit of skin prep. Talking to each other over top because I worked at a teaching hospital. They have a sterile pack. The patient's draped. The skin is prepped as though it's getting ready for surgery. Everybody's got full barrier precautions on. They use sterile gloves. If some hospitals will now actually have a checklist to make sure that the central line is inserted with all the checklists going on. It was a huge change. And that is now standard practice that we do for inserting central lines. So yeah, there's always pushback on new stuff. Anytime we get something new at home, I'm still having trouble getting used to my shifter on my new vehicle because it's a button to press instead of snapping it down into drive. These things take some time, but we can all be taught. If I myself at my age can learn to drive my new vehicle, I'm sure anybody can.
Yes, I love the push button and I don't have it anymore. So now I have to learn how to do it again. So I get it.
So some of the expressions I like to use as I go around, and the previous company that I worked at before I retired, we had a statement of, it's everyone's job to disinfect. It's not everybody's job to disinfect everything every time. And I love the way that that rolled out. It's everyone's job to disinfect. We're not asking nurses to become an EBS tech and clean the walls and the floors and the rails and the bathrooms and this kind of stuff. Now, some healthcare settings, they may have to do that depending on the resources available to them. And as you stated, we pay our EBS techs sometimes minimum wage. They get better shifts and better hours at the local fast food restaurant and will go to work there because they're not cleaning up vomit and feces and stuff that we have our environmental techs do that are well-trained to do it, and they do it very well. It's the other expression I like to use is your mother doesn't work here, clean up after yourself. And we've got into this hierarchy where physicians will do a procedure and expect the nurses to clean up their mess. And we stopped that after nurses kept getting stabbed in emergency because they didn't realize somebody had put a syringe down on the table. So we now have something in place that you handle your own sharps. You clean up after yourself, you get rid of the garbage. We'll make sure there's a garbage pail there for you. It's a change of mindset. The other expression I got from your magazine years ago, Eric Rose wrote an article on cleaning, and he had the statement, one good housekeeper can prevent more infections than a dozen doctors can cure. And I love it. And I, when I traveled around the country talking to EVS managers, that went up on a lot of whiteboards with reference to Eric Rose from your magazine, because it's so true. If we get the bugs up off the surface, the patient doesn't have them to self-inoculate themselves by picking up the bug and injecting them, picking up the virus and touching a mucous membrane, that T-zone that we have here. But they're only in the room once. They're given for a daily clean. We were doing some timing audits at my last position, and these EVS techs are in and out of the room in 3 minutes to do a daily clean of high-touch surfaces. Turnover, fine. They get anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. Some surveys I've seen, the average time for turnover, they want it done in 45 minutes. And the first thing I push back in healthcare is there is no average patient room. You can go into a room where it looks like somebody's exploded and you've got, you know, your 3 minutes to do your daily clean or your 45 minutes to do your turnover, not feasible. And when I talked to EVS techs about that, I said, how do you handle when you walk into a room for a turnover and the bed is still warm because the patient just left and nothing's been done by any of the other staff? Do you have a way of indicating that your job has just increased immensely? There isn't, generally speaking. So they have to strip the bed, which is usually the nurse's responsibility. They have to get someone to come and take the IV fluids off the IV stand, get rid of the medications that might still be in the medication box, all the stuff adding into their quote unquote average 45 minutes. Having the environment cleaner around the patient has to reduce the risk of them acquiring organisms that could make them sick. Having a clean environment when they do an aseptic practice, making sure you clean before you do your wound dressing, gets rid of those organisms that might have been left on that high touch surface. You talk them numbers. So in the paper, we have the paper that shows on average, you're going to have about 80 to 82 people come through your door frame on a daily basis in a med-surg unit. And that's everybody, nurses in and out, doctors in and out, family in and out, therapists, cleaners, food service people, 80 to 82 people a day coming in and out. And then you take the other paper that looks at, well, whenever somebody crosses a threshold, an interaction, they're going to touch the bed rail upwards of 3 times per interaction. So when you start doing some math, well, you know, if you have 80 some odd people coming into the waking day and the bed rails touch 3 times, you're up into the 200s that a bed rail could be touched. Now, I've had some pushback from well-respected researchers that I can't combine articles like that. It was actually Dr. John Boyce said to me, Jimmy, I really can't combine these two papers like that to come up with the 260 touches of a bed rail. But I did find a paper where they observed patients and activities over 6 days. And on average, the bed rail is touched 60 times a day. Back to what you were saying about hand hygiene. But if a bed rail is touched 60 times a day, are you comfortable with that only being disinfected once a day through that clean where EVS comes in and all the other care that can go on? It just doesn't make sense to me to not have some times that the bed rail has to be done. If as a care provider, I go in to change a patient out of an incontinence product that has defecated in their incontinence product and I need to change them, something's got to be wiped down. I can't do that without leaving bacteria or viruses or spores in the environment. And that's all we're saying. This is one of the times. Anything to do with feces or respiratory secretions within the patient's bed space, something's got to be wiped. What? What did you touch or use while you were changing that patient? And every care provider should be able to instantly visualize, well, last time I changed somebody, oh, Lord, yeah, I used the overbed table to put the clean brief on. I had to lower the side rail. I had to get the sheets off, which I dropped on the floor, which I know I'm not supposed to do. So those should have gone into the hamper, but I used the hamper. So maybe I need to do the overbed table, the side rail, and the hamper after changing the patient out of their incontinence product. Not a lot. I'm not saying you have to go and then scrub out the bedpan. You don't have to wipe down the commode chair if the patient didn't use the commode chair at the bedside. I'm only, whatever you touched or used during that care practice needs to be disinfected. And I think having it simplified that way as an addendum to this article, hopefully would drop people's shoulders down. Because as I talk to them about this, you get this, I don't have time for anything else. What you touched, what you use, and get the shoulders to drop a little bit. You know, I'm sitting in Canada talking to you. So we have the public health system for our hospitals. You don't pay to go to the hospital. It's all part of our taxes that we support everybody across the country. But we need more staff because it's expensive. Your for-profit system in many areas of the United States, they don't want to lose the profits to put an extra RN on per shift so that I don't have five patients to look after. I may only have to look after four. We don't want to give you an extra care aide. We don't want another EVS tech because we have to pay them a certain amount with benefits and blah, 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 blah. It's very expensive to do healthcare, but it's also very expensive to have somebody on isolation precautions. It's very, you can't put a price on losing someone on their family. And I actually heard a presentation by a good friend of mine here in Canada who lost his father-in-law to two different healthcare-associated infections. He had a sternal wound infection with MRSA after having his CABG done. And while trying to treat that, he acquired C. difficile and died. And my friend tried to work out what that cost his family in losing a father, a husband, a father-in-law, and a grandfather, and a volunteer. And it was just a very interesting way to look at things, that would the targeted moments of environmental disinfection help keep him alive? Don't know. It may have helped limit the spread of the MRSA that they acquired in their sternal wound. It may have removed some spores from the environment around him that may have got carried into his room. The really, you know, the papers that I've looked at, there's really not a lot of C. difficile spores in the healthcare environment on visibly clean surfaces. If there's feces around, yeah, there could be billions of spores present in that feces. But on visibly clean surfaces, a wipe is going to remove 99% of what's on that surface. And I got evidence and papers to support that. If you're using a disinfectant that may not be sporicidal, killing six logs or 99.9999% of the organisms there, but it removes or kills two and a half log, that might be enough on a visibly clean surface to lower the number of C. diff spores that are around a patient. It's just getting back to, we just need to clean and disinfect a little more effectively near the patient surfaces after care practices. If you've got a patient that, well, first of all, you shouldn't have a patient sitting in your hospital that can feed themselves and can ambulate and do all this other stuff unless they're under observation. But for some patients, this is not a lot of extra wipes. To fully implement it as published in something like an intensive care unit with a vented patient, with one-on-one nursing, yeah, it could start to be a little bit onerous. But then look at the times that it needs to be done. The intensive care unit that I first worked at when I went full-time here, we had two full-time EVS techs on from 7 to 3 that were responsible for taking care of all the rooms at least once. And it took two of them to get up through 21 bedded spaces. But they were diligent to what they did and the surfaces that they cleaned. And they understood where they fit into the hierarchy, as did all of the other healthcare staff. It drives me crazy, back to how we treat our environmental services staff. It drives me crazy to hear an EBS tech being asked to leave the room so that care can be provided. Because like you said, they're not important. And I picked this up once when we were doing auditing with a fluorescent dot on surfaces. I went around and put 10 dots in a patient's room at 3 p.m. And the next day, just before the end of the shift, I went back up and the EBS tech said, "Can I follow you?" And I said, "Sure." So I checked the tap at the sink and there was no dot there. And she goes, "Yeah, that's where, I clean that always." And I checked the overbed table and she had got the dot there and she got the side rail and she got the control. And as I went into the bathroom, there was a commode chair there and the dot was still in the back of the commode chair. And she looks at me going, You know what happened? I was in here yesterday and I just finished doing my around the room, and I always go clockwise, bathroom last. And as I came in here, the physician came in and said, I need to examine the patient. Can you come back? And she said, I left the room and I forgot to mark down that I hadn't finished the room. And she said to me, Jim, you know what I need to do? I need to have a piece of paper, because you'd be surprised how many times I get asked to leave the patient's room. And I'm going to have a piece of paper now on my cart so I can put down that I was in 301 and I didn't quite get around and I need to finish the bathroom, so that after the physician's done, I can make sure I got back to that room. And like, I'm just standing there with my little fluorescent black light. She solved the problem. And then she went off, I'm sure, to talk to her peers, going, guess what? I left a dot that Jim found. And it was because I got asked to leave the room, and I'm going to put a piece of paper on my cart. And she probably did her own internal positive deviant kind of talk with her peers at the next break and solved the problem for everyone coming through. But it got back to the physicians should have stuck their head in the room and said, when will you be done so I can come and examine this patient? Showing an equality of, we're all part of this care team. It's not, I'm doc, you clean. Will this help that? Maybe that commode chair would have got wiped by whoever used it for the next time the patient said, I need to defecate or urinate. Could you bring the commode chair over? Because I used that chair and I touched it, I'm responsible for wiping off where I touched or where I used it. It just ties it in that then maybe that chair, when it's cleaned thoroughly by the EBS tech the next day, would have been much safer to use if it had been missed by the EBS tech because they had to leave the room. One of the things that really stood out in my healthcare career was walking into the hospital one day, and this was out in British Columbia, and the CEO was ahead of me. And he walked into the lobby, stopped, bent over, and picked something up off the floor and put it in the garbage and continued to his office. And I thought, we are all part of the team. You know, he's the CEO. He was making a few X's extra than I'm making, but he wanted his healthcare facility to look good. And Lord knows I've done that in my role as a microbiology tech or an infection preventionist. You do have to be careful in unionized shops. And I've had people joke with me about that. Are you doing my job? It's everyone's role to disinfect. Not everybody's role to disinfect everything every time. So I'm not taking any work away from you. That was one of the pushbacks I had. In a union shop, you're taking work away from the EBS tech. I'm thinking, no, they still got tons of work to do. This is the point of care disinfection that we need to focus on. Care has been provided by a unionized worker in your healthcare setting. I'm just asking them to clean up after themselves. If it's a bad spill, if the patient, when their incontinence product failed, usually the nurse has to do that gross cleanup and literally gross for what you can see and gross because they have to clean up the feces that's there before they call the EBS tech. Or if there's a blood spill, many hospitals, the nurse would clean up the blood and then call the EBS tech. They work as part of the team. It's not that nurses never have to do that. Many hospitals have trained their EBS tech to clean up frank blood or to clean up some visible feces that's present because they're trained cleaners. They know what they're supposed to do and they've got the products to do it properly. So there's areas that do this. And I think if you read up on positive deviance, where you find the person that can make a system work, somebody out there must have something like this going on and just hasn't seen the paper. And we need them to publish results as to what happens when we clean more frequently than once a day.
So we need people to respond to this interview to say, hey, I've done this or I've done something similar. So I will request that of our audience and see if we can get any comments, any discussion. Do you have anything else you would like to add? Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that our audience understands and takes away from our discussion?
I think when I do a presentation on this, I talk about the complexity of a healthcare-associated infection occurring, which is a whole separate presentation that I've got. And right now we set it about, we do it as a math equation, and we break it out into different aspects of what can lead to an HAI. And some of it just being the patient acuity, right? The young, the old, on antibiotics, tubes in place, they're all very susceptible to getting an HAI. We've got our hand hygiene practices. How well do we have the right product at the right place and this kind of stuff? And I go through antibiotic stewardship program, clinical practices, fecal waste management, and environmental disinfection. And I look at all the aspects that can lead to a dangerous situation for the patient acquiring an HAI. And the original presentation has 36 factors that can lead to an HAI. that environmental cleaning only controls for 9 of them. Because there's a lot of other things that go on around these HAIs. And hand hygiene, if you just focus on hand hygiene, if I get hand hygiene to 100%, that controls for 7 of the variables. Because there's a lot of other things that go on in a healthcare setting. So I think when people take a look at how complex our healthcare systems are, and if we can tie into these environmental disinfection concept of point of care disinfection with the care practices and good EBS and good hand hygiene, we can control for about 25 of the 36 factors that can lead to an HAI if we get this all tied in. So it's sort of part and parcel. I've done the presentation to quality groups in healthcare setting because that involves the entire team that looks after everything. And I do have my food and nutrition people there that are feeding and hydrating our patients. I've got the physician group there. I'll have all the therapy groups there. The nurse leaders are present. And I did this presentation in a hospital that shall remain nameless, and I believe it was in North Carolina. And I did it online and live, and there's dead silence after the presentation because you can hear everybody going, he's got a point. Did they implement it? I don't think so. Because there's going to be pushback and there's worries about how to do it. And I'm not sure I have the simple expression of if during care you touched it or used it, disinfect it. So I think the takeaway on this is our healthcare settings are hugely complex. There's a lot of stuff going on daily, and our population is aging. And we're getting better at saving younger populations. You know, when you've got babies that are being kept alive at 25, 26 weeks and getting them out of the hospital, it may take a while, but they're very, very susceptible to getting an infection. Our elderly are very, very susceptible to getting an infection. We can't just focus on something like hand hygiene. And I've had to talk to patient advocates that, you know, stand up there at conferences that I've been at and say, if we can get hand hygiene to 100%, my loved one would still be alive. I'm so sorry you lost your loved one. But hand hygiene at 100% solely is not going to take care of this. It'll help. Don't get me wrong. But there's so many other factors that go on. And I think people that listen to this discussion need to talk to their quality folk about it's everyone's job to disinfect. Not everyone's job to disinfect everything every time. But we need to take a good look at, we can't just clean and disinfect once a day.
Absolutely. Sir, this has been a pleasure. I always enjoy speaking with you, and this has been amazing. I would like to meet with you again and do some follow-up in a couple of months and see what we found out. How's that sound?
Sounds wonderful. I'd love feedback on the concept.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me, Tori. It's been great.